The headlines: Iran says it respects the territorial integrity of all countries and that diplomacy is the best way to settle differences with neighboring Azerbaijan. Poland places its military on alert after a missile hits its territory near the border with Ukraine. And Donald Trump officially launches his presidential campaign with a promise to make sure Biden won't get another 4 years in office. Our top story for this half hour: Iran says a diplomatic channel is the best way to resolve misunderstandings with Azerbaijan. Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian made the remarks during a phone conversation with his Azeri counterpart, Ceyhun Bayramov. He was referring to recent comments by Azerbaijan's president about Azeri-speaking Iranians. Amir Abdollahian expressed discontent with President Ilham Aliyev's comments. The Iranian diplomat said respecting the sovereignty and territorial integrity of other countries must be a basic principle for any nation. For his part, Bayramov described as positive talks and contacts between Iranian and Azeri officials. He said Baku is ready to boost relations with Tehran in an effort to settle differences. The European Union has imposed fresh sanctions on Iran over its response to the recent riots in the country. An EU statement said 29 individuals and three organizations have been targeted over what it called Tehran's widespread use of force against peaceful protesters. Interior Minister Ahmad Vahidi, as well as several military and police officials, are on the sanctions list. Press TV is one of the three entities blacklisted. The sanctions include travel bans and asset freezes. Iran has strongly criticized the sanctions. It called the EU move unfounded, illegal, and meddlesome.
On Monday, the European Union announced new sanctions on a number of Iranian officials and three organizations, including Iran's 24-hour English news channel Press TV, for alleged crackdown on protests which began following the death of Mahsa Amini, a young Iranian woman who collapsed in police custody and was pronounced dead a few days later at hospital. The state broadcaster is accused of airing, quote, forced confessions of detainees, according to an EU statement. A baseless claim that has surprised Press TV staff and managers, as no such forced confessions have been produced or broadcast by the English-language news channel during the recent riots. On the contrary, the news channel has made a great effort to counter fake narratives fostered by Western media.
They make claims about Press TV producing and airing forced confessions. I've been working here at Press TV for almost a decade now, and I can tell you that Press TV has not aired any confessions whatsoever, forced or unforced. So that shows you how such decisions by the EU and the like are based on unfounded claims with no basis in reality. You know, I see this as part of their hybrid warfare against Iran. If you look at the big picture, you see them supporting terrorist groups, and these sanctions on Press TV I see as part of the media war and their narrative control. They want to present the war with their distorted version of what's going on in Iran these days, and seemingly they don't feel much comfortable with Press TV challenging their narrative. So they would try everything to silence us or make us less heard, but we're not going to be silenced.
Riots broke out in Iran in mid-September after the death of Mahsa Amini. Rioters brutally attacked security officers and caused massive damage to public property. Iran's intelligence ministry has revealed that the United States and the United Kingdom were directly involved in the unrest, adding that dozens of terrorists affiliated with the Israeli regime and anti-revolution groups have also been detained in the unrest. Experts believe that sanctions imposed on Press TV by the EU and earlier by the government of Canada are aimed at muzzling free speech and alternative views. And once again, the term human rights violations has turned into a tool for Western countries to advance their own agenda, as street riots in Iran don't seem to be achieving the goals they expected. Taking into consideration all the different aspects, Press TV is not discouraged by the unfair treatment and false accusations. Despite all obstacles, Press TV will continue to be the voice of the voiceless, reporting underreported stories and news overlooked by mainstream media. Gisum Shahmadi, Tehran.
A large business delegation from Russia has visited Iran to explore areas of cooperation. This comes as the two countries are poised to boost their commercial ties amid U.S. sanctions that target both nations. Yusuf Jalali reports.
When there's mutual trust, a deal is a deal. It's this easy to arrive at an agreement when the two sides of the bargain are from Russia and Iran. These B2B meetings come as part of an economic forum held in Tehran between Iranian businesses and over 100 companies from Russia.
We're a Russian logistic company, and we're here to participate in this business forum to find some partners for business with Iran. We are thinking to transport goods to Iran, from Iran, through Iran.
Our activity is about gas, oil, petrochemical equipment, machinery, instrument. We can export many items to Russian companies.
Co's interests coincide on many fronts. Both are faced with U.S. sanctions, and both are signatories to the 2015 deal, which has faced troubles following the U.S. withdrawal from the pact in 2018 and the reinstatement of sanctions on Iran. While the bans have adversely affected the Russo-Iranian trade, businessmen here believe there's a strong will from both Tehran and Moscow to overcome those restrictions.
I don't think it will be like a very, very big problem for our countries. Just, we have a border, we have a Caspian Sea, and we can transport cargo. This sanction, it is some problem for the trading, for the money transferring, but it's okay for logistics, no problem.
The American measures have complicated the Russian-Iranian commercial ties when it comes to money transfer and banking transactions. While alternatives such as the use of national currencies have already paid off, legal experts attending this forum say they have a better way out. Cryptocurrency.
Using cryptocurrencies, Iran and Moscow can effectively ditch the U.S. dollar. So if the two sides include this transaction method in their contracts, they can proceed with their businesses seamlessly without any concern over the impacts of U.S. measures.
Visits between Iranian and Russian officials have in recent months increased, following the West tightening its economic measures against both countries. Tehran and Moscow are now eyeing a 20-year strategic partnership treaty that would lay out the roadmap for future expansion of ties at all levels, from politics to economy and security.
This year, Tehran and Russia traded some $4 billion worth of commodities, roughly 90% up compared to last year's trade volume. Now, given the growing relationship between the two sides, the Iran-Russia Chamber of Commerce predicts that this figure will hit $10 billion by 2024. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Nearly 10 months into the Russia-Ukraine war, Moscow accuses Kiev of failing to find any peaceful solution to end the deadly conflict.
Third world countries are calling for a peaceful settlement, call for agreements to be made quickly. They know perfectly well that Ukraine is dragging out this process, that the Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky banned at a legislative level, banned holding negotiations with Russia by his order. So it's not a question for us. And that is what I said today to French President Emmanuel Macron and German Chancellor Olaf Scholz during brief talks.
Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said Ukraine is refusing to talk to Russia and has put forward what he called unrealistic conditions for peace. The top Russian diplomat also slammed the West for its approach toward the Russian offensive in Ukraine, accusing the United States and its allies of provoking the conflict. Lavrov said the West started the Ukraine war and had been preparing for it for many years. The Russian military offensive in Ukraine began on February the 24th. Poland raises its military readiness after a projectile landing in one of its eastern villages kills two people near the border with Ukraine. The Polish government says the explosion was most probably caused by a Russian-made missile. It has summoned Russia's ambassador to Warsaw for an explanation. Meantime, U.S. President Joe Biden and some of his allies who are in Bali, Indonesia, for the G20 summit have held emergency talks over the matter. Biden has said that the missile is unlikely to have been fired by Russia itself, but that more investigations need to be carried out. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has also expressed concern about the situation, saying it's absolutely essential to avoid an escalation in the war. The Ukrainian president, though, has been less cautious at pointing fingers. Volodymyr Zelensky says the explosion has been an attempt by Moscow to spread terror.
Firing missiles at NATO territory is a Russian attack on collective security. This is a very significant escalation. We must act. I want to say now to all our Polish brothers and sisters, free people will not be broken by terror.
Other European countries have also reacted to the missile strike in Poland. London and Berlin have expressed solidarity with Warsaw. France has urged NATO countries to approach the matter with utmost caution. A French presidency official said many countries in Europe possess the same kind of weapons, so it's not easy to identify who was behind the attack. Moscow, on the other hand, has denied any involvement, saying it fired no missiles near Poland's border. The Russian defense minister has described the reports as a deliberate provocation aimed at escalating the situation, and China has called on all parties to stay calm and exercise restraint to avoid any escalation. Our correspondent in Donetsk, Johnny Miller, joined us earlier with more details on the explosion in Poland and what might have caused it.
There's propaganda battle going on at the moment, some suggesting that it was a Russian missile, also evidence suggesting that it was a Ukrainian anti-air defense missile that hit the farm. But at the moment, an investigation is going on. Some in the Western media are suggesting that this may well have been a Russian attempt to test NATO's resolve. I do find that unlikely. There's also other suggestions that this was a provocation from Ukraine. Of course, Ukraine very keen for NATO to get more involved in the conflict. All this could well have just been an accident. Accidents happen in war. But this does raise the very real possibility that the beginning of World War III or nuclear Armageddon could well begin due to an accident or a miscalculation from both sides. It's also clear that events like this have been used by both sides to escalate the conflict. So we'll find out whether in the coming days whether NATO will use this event to get even more involved in the conflict than they already are.
EU defense ministers agreed to increase military spending by 70 billion euros during the next 3 years. The decision has drawn criticism because EU citizens are enduring a growing social crisis. Jerome Hughes reports from Brussels.
In just the past 9 months, the EU and US have together pumped 32 billion euro worth of lethal weapons into Ukraine. At a meeting here in Brussels on Tuesday, EU defence ministers agreed to increase their military spending by a huge amount between now and the end of 2025.
70 billion euros.
Apparently, there is an urgent need to replace weapons being sent to Ukraine.
The supply of arms to Ukraine, it's a continuous flow. It flows every day. And every day there is a member state who provides more. The system has already been provided. I don't think we need new systems. What they need is ammunition to make the systems work.
One expert we interviewed online told us it is a dangerous policy.
The problem with further funding is that it suggests further escalation. An escalation is hazardous because by intent or by miscalculation, it can lead all of the parties into a nuclear conflict.
Many peace activists and rights groups say the military spending is grotesque given the EU's growing social crisis. Those in the European Parliament who oppose NATO and are calling for peace talks between Russia and Ukraine are furious at attempts to silence them.
We talk about democracy, but where is this going to end up? Those you brand as populist and anti-European have a democratic right to disagree with you on the course that Europe is taking.
Defence ministers have agreed to establish camps in up to 20 EU nations that will be used to train Ukrainian soldiers. Some security analysts are suggesting long-standing, controversial ambitions to create an EU army within the EU have effectively been put on hold. And now the strategy is to create an EU army in Ukraine. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Former U.S. President Donald Trump is once again back in the race for the White House in the 2024 elections.
In order to make America great and glorious again, I am tonight announcing my candidacy for President of the United States.
During a speech, Donald Trump also vowed to prevent President Joe Biden from becoming president for a second term. In the midterm elections last week, the Republicans failed to obtain the anticipated red wave of victories. They failed to win the Senate, but are still on track to win control of the House. Biden has reacted to the news by saying Trump has failed America. Trump is entering the race for presidency while he's facing trouble on several fronts, such as the attack on the Capitol building by his supporters in January 2021, as well as the removal of classified documents from the White House. He has called the investigations politically motivated and denies any wrongdoing. A U.S. federal judge has ruled that the government could no longer use a law provision used for COVID-19 controls to block the entry of asylum-seeking migrants. Judge Emmett Sullivan said the so-called Title 42 was, quote, arbitrary and capricious policy that violated government procedures. The ruling leaves the government with few tools to block the entry of migrants at the southern border with Mexico. Hundreds of thousands have been blocked each month under the rules. Sullivan also ordered that the government must appeal to a higher court if it wants to overturn the ruling. Title 42 allows expulsion of persons who have recently been in country where communicable diseases were present. During the COVID-19 pandemic, the administration of former President Donald Trump used his provision to block entry of many migrants. The practice continued under the Joe Biden administration. Well, supporters of Brazil's outgoing president, Jair Bolsonaro, have held rallies in several cities demanding the military prevent President elect Lula da Silva from taking power in 2023. Protesters claimed there was election fraud. They said they would not accept the result of the vote, but the defense ministry has dismissed the claim. The ministry said international observers have validated the election result, which proves Lula is the next legitimate president of Brazil. Lula da Silva won the October 30th runoff with just under 51% of the vote compared to Bolsonaro's 49%. Lula was also president from 2003 to 2010 and left with sky-high approval ratings. That's a wrap for now. Bye, everybody.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality, youth, Eastern tales, roundtable discussions, culture, politics, all produced by IRIB English Radio.
The widespread criticism of the Republican media against former President Donald Trump and other senior GOP leaders shows the results of U.S. midterm elections were not favorable to the Republicans. The results have not only surprised Republicans but also infuriated them, with many pundits and experts expecting a Republican red wave which never materialized. We have taken a look at some of the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us.
Mm-hmm.
Fox News Channel has covered this story. The former New York governor, George Pataki, has said on Sunday, 13th of November, former U.S. President Donald Trump is tearing apart the Republican Party after the GOP failed to take control of both houses of Congress. Following the midterm elections on 8th of November, the GOP failed to win control of the Senate and underperformed in races across the country. It appears the Democrats would control the Senate and Republicans would win the House of Representatives. George Pataki said, "The problem is Donald Trump. The sooner he goes away, the quicker we will have the new Republican Party." Pataki, who served as governor of New York from 1995 to 2006, added, "He's had his time and now he's tearing apart the Republican Party since the election." Republicans were expected to take control of the United States House of Representatives and had a good shot at a Senate majority heading into the election day as President Joe Biden struggled with low approval ratings ahead of recent elections, partly due to public frustration over high inflation. But according to mainstream U.S. media, Democrats outperformed expectations and on Saturday, 12th of November, captured the Senate majority. The Democrats are likely to control the Senate as they have for the past 2 years, with 50 of its 100 seats, since Vice President Kamala Harris will hold a tie-breaking vote. Senior GOP senators blamed midterm election losses on Republican candidates aligned with Donald Trump, saying those candidates underperformed on election day. However, Donald Trump on Sunday, 13th of November, blamed Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell for the disappointing Republican performance. George Pataki on Sunday said, "When we talk about Donald Trump, we lose," saying the party followed him off a cliff in 2018 and they'd followed him to a loss to Joe Biden, of all people, in 2020. George Pataki said Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who won his re-election on Tuesday, 8th of November, and other rising stars within the Republican Party should now take center stage. The former New York governor said, "There are other good candidates, but the point being, if we look forward, we're going to win." He added, "If we look backward with Donald Trump, we're going to lose again." Republicans remain close to winning the House of Representatives and officials continued counting ballots. It could take several days or more before the outcome of enough House races is known to determine which party will control the 435-seat chamber. As of Monday, 14th of November, Republicans had won 212 seats, with 218 needed for a majority, ahead of Democrats with 205 seats. The Hill newspaper has also covered the same story. Republican Senator Bill Cassidy has put the blame of midterm election losses on Republican candidates aligned with former President Donald Trump, saying those candidates underperformed on Election Day. Following Tuesday, 8th of November's midterm elections, the junior U.S. Senator from Louisiana said on Sunday, 13th of November, "The Republican Party needs to explain to the American people where we think the party should go in the future." GOP Senator Bill Cassidy stated, "Republican candidates who were talking about the future and who had managed their states well, they overperformed. The American people want ideas, they want a future." Bill Cassidy said he was looking at the 2022 midterm elections empirically when he said Trump-endorsed candidates underperformed. The senator said, "Those closely aligned with the past, those are the ones that underperformed. We as a party need to have a debate about ideas. In that debate, we need to explain to the American people exactly where we think our country should go." Senate Republicans are worried that Donald Trump may derail the GOP party's chances of winning the runoff election in Georgia next month by either casting doubt on the legitimacy of the midterm elections or announcing his plan for the 2024 presidential election. The Wall Street Journal has also covered the same story. Former U.S. President Donald Trump is under fire from within the GOP after a recent elections turned into a complete disappointment for the Republican Party. Florida Senator Rick Scott said on Friday, 11th of November, that the 2022 midterm elections were a complete disappointment for Republicans, lamenting low voter turnout on Election Day. Rick Scott said, "Here's what happened to us. Election Day, our voters didn't show up. We didn't get enough voters. It was a complete disappointment." He said the Republicans, who were expected to make significant gains in the midterm elections, lacked a positive political message to prompt GOP voters to show up at the polls. Rick Scott said, "I think we've got to reflect now. What didn't happen?" Adding, "I think we didn't have enough of a positive message. We said everything about how bad the Biden agenda was. It's bad. The Democrats are radical, but we have to have a plan of what we stand for." In the meantime, Donald Trump was seen as largely to blame for the Republicans' disappointing performance in Tuesday, 8th of November's vote. GOP allies criticized him on social media and cable news networks, questioning whether he should continue as the party's leader and pointing to his toxic political message as the common thread woven through three consecutive lackluster election cycles. David Urban, a longtime Donald Trump advisor, said in an interview, "Republicans have followed Donald Trump off the side of a cliff." Former Representative Peter King, a Republican from Long Island who has long supported Donald Trump, said, "I strongly believe he should no longer be the face of the Republican Party," adding that the Republican Party can become a personality cult. Kayleigh McEnany, a former Trump White House press secretary and one of his longtime defenders, said on Wednesday, 9th of November, that Donald Trump should hold off on making any announcements until the Senate elections is completed, pending the runoff election in Georgia in December. Kayleigh McEnany insisted, "He needs to put it on pause, absolutely. If I'm advising any contender, no one announces 2024 until we get through 6th of December. The U.S. Republican Party, which had been expected to make significant gains in this year's midterm elections, lost its grip on the Senate majority. Democrats celebrated their victory in the upper chamber on Sunday, as the fate of the House of Representatives still remained uncertain. Maryland Governor Larry Hogan said, "It's basically the third election in a row that Donald Trump has cost us the race."
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring
event.
In Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
The EU has announced a new round of sanctions against the Islamic Republic for how it has dealt with rioters who have threatened Iran's national security. Now, aside from its sanctioning high-profile Iranian politicians and important figures, it has also sanctioned Press TV International on the grounds that it aired, quote, forced confessions of detainees. Ironically, Press TV has not aired any kind of alleged confessions, forced or not, putting into question not only the sanctions themselves, but the credibility of the EU. Now, in this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at how the EU and respective countries within the bloc are guilty themselves of human rights violations, forced confessions, and torture. First, let me introduce our guests for this edition of The Spotlight. Host at Press TV's Hidden Files program, Marzia Hashmi, joins us here in the studios. And also host of Press TV's Midi Stream, Marwa Osman joins us from Beirut.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
I'd like to welcome you both. Marzia, welcome. Marwa, welcome.
You.
I'm going to start first with you, Marzia. Looking at the sanctions that the EU has leveled against Iran, aside from the figures, whether it's government officials or what have you, I'd like to focus on Press TV's sanctioning by the EU, accusing Press TV of these forced confessions of detainees, something which, as far as I'm aware of, where I'm active also as a presenter, we did not do something like that.
Right.
So first your reaction of the sanctions themselves, and then on that premise, which at this point lacks credibility.
I'm not surprised, Kaveh. It's not the first time that we have seen various acts against Press TV. Based on nothing, but what it tells me is that we are being effective. Because if we weren't being effective, they wouldn't be so aggressive. We've seen them shut down our YouTube channel. We've seen what they did to our PressTV.com. So obviously, despite our limitations, meaning budget-wise compared to we see all the Farsi stations that are beaming in from outside the country and how much money that they put into what they're trying to do, obviously we cannot even begin to compare with that. And despite us being one station in English, one station, look at how aggressive they are based on nothing. And this is really important because when they talk about freedom of speech, I mean, they're lacking the basics right there. Shouldn't they have to at least explain? Shouldn't they have to prove it? Press TV has said, okay, show us what you're talking about, what you say that we're guilty of, but they don't have anything to show. But it doesn't matter. It's not based on substance, and it never had been. This is really media war. And unfortunately, they've never played on fair grounds. They're just trying to silence our voice.
Okay. Two key words there that I'm going to throw at you, Marwa, is one. First of all, is the adjective that Marzia Hashmi used, the aggressiveness that and the force of that aggression that's being displayed through the way that they're transferring what they want to transfer. Secondly, is the fact that we're looking at, and you as a journalist, I'm sure perhaps can give us some insight, is this is not just a coverage to cover, let's say, protests or what have you. There's a design, there's a system that appears from these, for example, British or UK state-funded TV broadcaster, BBC Persian, or the Saudi-funded Iran International. They have a system in place with a goal that they want to achieve, which is multifaceted. Perhaps you can tell us. Do you agree with the fact that this is something that's pre-planned with a certain goal in mind?
Oh, definitely. It's just one big package that has been financed and funded ever since the revolution in 1979 in Iran, and ever since Iran had a very impactful and very important role in bringing about the axis of resistance in West Asia and defying neocolonialism and imperialism in our region, but specifically against the Islamic Republic of Iran because of what its ideology is based on, of what its basic regime. And when we say regime, it's not the regime that the West actually used. We're talking about the system that's founded inside of the Islamic Republic of Iran ever since the revolution up until to this moment. This media frenzy that's going on, this kind of warfare that Marzia spoke about, for me, I see it as some sort of a new type of occupation. They are occupying us even in waves and frequencies on the media and in mainstream media or in social media or on online on the web. They are trying to occupy the space and not allow us to have our own space. This is a new form of occupation. It's a new form of hegemony. It's a new form of attack and aggressive warfare of information that they are trying to take away our right of not only freedom of speech and freedom of expression and freedom of the press, but also our right to tell the story as it is from inside of Iran. Because now the media frenzy in the Western world is speaking about Iran hanging or killing 14,000 Iranians. They are speaking about numbers that are beyond pathetic, beyond clown behavior as media. They don't want to even hear what's coming out from the ground in Iran. And this is the role of Press TV, being an Iranian media from inside of Iran, speaking the voices of the Iranian people that have been suffering, suffocating under unilateral punitive measures since 1979 up until now, suffering because of the warfare of the military bases that are surrounding their countries, of the insurgents that are now being infiltrated into Iranian borders, coming with the fund, the training, and the support of the West, specifically Britain, the US, and some European countries. At this very vital moment in Iranian history, they want to silence once and for all the only English voice that's coming out as a broadcast company from the Islamic Republic of Iran. But they really cannot take that to another level, sure, because we also have our space that we will not withhold. We will stand steadfast in it, and we will defend our right to speak the truth no matter what happens. But the truth also is that they are powerful. Okay. They have the tools to try to manipulate the public, especially in the West. And our role here is to portray the truth and nothing but the truth that's going on inside of Iran.
Okay, that's pretty much what they are doing. This whole notion of manipulation is, of course, I think it's been taken to another level. You can perhaps tell us better, Marzia, in the way that they are trying to portray this image and paint this landscape of a revolution that's in the making here in Iran. That's what they're trying to do.
Right.
And there's many ways of describing this for lack of time, whether it's interference in other countries' affairs, et cetera, we know that, or using the media as a political weapon, perhaps. But there are regulatory bodies that are supposed to monitor this, and I have to ask you about Ofcom. Where is Ofcom?
Yeah, indeed. Where is Ofcom or other regulatory bodies? You know, Kaveh, it's interesting. In this hybrid war, we are seeing all kinds of things. They're trying their best and from various directions to bring down the Islamic Republic. I read an interesting article. It was quite unbelievable today. In Newsweek, I just want to give you a sample of what is being done. Now, Newsweek, of course, for those who do not know, an American news magazine, a very popular one over there, and it had an article in dealing with Iran, basically giving hints or complete direction of how to bring about what they call regime change. So we are transcending from a so-called news organization that's supposed to report on the news and actually saying, I really want to read some of this because I just want to be exact and quote what they're saying. Because it says, here's a plan to weaken the regime. First, Israel should intensify its economic pressure through a campaign of influence operations inside of Iran. Then it talks about the goal of the influence campaign should be creating a massive currency crisis that forces the regime to spend down its foreign currency reserves and increases the number of angry Iranians who take to the streets. That's just a sample of so many other points that the writers bring out in this article. What is this? Where are the regulatory boards?
CIA guidelines.
Where are the regulatory boards? Why aren't they saying, this is economic terrorism. This is totally economic terrorism. So they are propagating, creating economic terrorism. This is what they're trying to create on the ground. So where are the regulatory boards when it comes to these type of incitement? And this is what we have seen throughout this 2 months.
Indeed. One of the things that really stands out, Marwa Usman, is the fact that you have these interviews that are taking place. First of all, I think, again, as a journalist, I ask you the question where you can see that they want a continuity. So they have to pretty much highlight anything that they construe as a protest, whether it's a couple people walking down the street, or maybe 10 or 12 people, depending on the angles of the cameras, et cetera. The continuity, however, is broken up by the interviews that they have. And the interviews have been with terrorist groups. From what I'm looking at over here, these terrorist groups are varied in terms of the ones that, based on stats now, in just 50 days, this would be the Saudi-funded Iran International, 25 terrorists and secessionists that appeared for more than 120 times in a matter of 50 days. And the groups including Abdullah Mohtadi, the leader and secretary general of the so-called Kamala Party of Iran and Kurdistan, Mustafa Hijri, leader of the so-called Democratic Party of Iran and Kurdistan, and the list goes on. Of course, again, these are terrorist groups, and yet, again, the regulatory body has no monitoring of this, and it allows this to be aired.
First of all, what Marzia read was very important for the people to see that they are CIA guidelines. These are the regime change guidelines that the CIA spreads across the targeted countries that they want to pinpoint their focus on and try to change the regime there. I could tell you this is just another page from the regime change book. I can give you the names of Mohaisni, for example, of Mohammad Junani. This is the same book that was going on in Syria, and they gave them platforms on multiple news media outlets, especially in the Arab world. I can name a few of them, but basically the terrorist groups, for example, inside Syria or in northeastern Lebanon, also had a lot of time of media time of broadcast time on these same TV channels that you mentioned, and even more, especially in the Arab world, spread all across the map of the Arab world. This is just this typical another day, a 101 manual of regime change for them, utilizing the media as part of this warfare. And it wouldn't even surprise me if they go ahead and start with the actors, the crisis actors, and they would also go to hawks and to some sort of a sham that they would create, similar to what happened, for example, in Syria with the Khan Sheikhoun thingy, and also what happened in Lebanon, in South Lebanon, when Lebanon was being bombarded last year in 2021 by the Israeli entity. They utilized some of their insurgents to capture resistance fighters in southern Lebanon and portray to the world that the South doesn't want the resistance, when in fact it was just one or two people with a camera trying to portray that this is what the population and the public wants. I'm not surprised, and I wouldn't be surprised if they go further with such media manipulation, because it is part of the guidelines and the manual, the 101 book to regime change. But the issue is, it's just the definition of insanity when you repeat the same thing and expect different results. I mean, they failed in Lebanon, they failed in Syria, they failed in Iraq, and now they are failing miserably in the Islamic Republic of Iran. And at the same time, they are trying to hush us, to silence us, not to tell the world what's going on, the reality, to expose them, and then tell them that, no, the Islamic Republic of Iran is not in shambles, it is not weakened, it is not losing its momentum and its threshold against imperialism and neocolonialism and the unilateral punitive measures that they are putting forth, and to tell them that, yes, there is some sort of a difficulty in the economy, but at the end of the day, Iran has many friends, and it is trying to make use of that friendship, especially in Eurasia. So sure, they don't want the public to know what kind of shenanigans they are playing in our part of the world, because they want to portray it as an undemocratic and authoritarian, a non-human rights defender country, a country that doesn't respect women, despite the fact that the respect that women get inside of the Islamic Republic is not found in all of the allied countries in the Persian Gulf Arab states that are allied to the West. It's not even an inch found there. But at the end of the day, they are silenced because they get benefit from the oil and gas from the Persian Gulf Arab states.
Sure.
But Iran is still independent. It's a sovereign state, and they don't like it. They don't like the fact that it's a strong, independent state. They want to see it broken, but it's not going to happen.
Sure. Well, we got a glimpse of one of the outlets, the state-funded BBC's Persian language, where one of the senior presenters there, I'm not going to name her because she has done her part in terms of speaking against Iran and its government, but through a leaked phone call, we understood what the Saudi-funded Iran International is all about, what it wants to do. It was very interesting reading down some of the comments aside from the leak of how all of a sudden you see it was kind of like a division there from the people saying, really? And then they kind of a reality check as to that's the goal that they have. They want Iran to be broken up into pieces. When you have that as a goal, and we understand that this may be spreading with other journalists who are working for these two organizations who have this obviously intention, that then the lines become blurred for the unfortunate people whom they were able to influence. Do you think we're going to see more of that coming about in terms of people realizing that the path they're going down is wrong, whether outside Iran or within Iran?
Right. Well, I mean, this has been such an aggressive propaganda campaign internationally, as we know from the very beginning, and the number of tweets that originally tweeted that individual's name, Mahsa Amini, to just getting stars and famous people from all over the world involved. And it's quite amazing, as if, you know, one Iranian female is that important, especially to the West. But I do believe that we're going to see more people becoming aware. To be honest, this is not something new. I mean, since I've been following Iran and things that have happened since the revolution as a college student, as a college journalism student, and it started then. From the very beginning, they actually started negative propaganda about the revolution. It won't last. It will not make it. It won't last 6 months, 1 year. There was always something. So for someone my age, it's total, you know, by the playbook. It's nothing new. For perhaps some of our young people in their teens, early 20s, they may believe initially this nonsense about freedom. And especially when they try to use women, they bring in the females. I mean, interestingly enough, as you know, Kaveh, this is a country where 60% of our university students are females. So tell me, how can these women be so oppressed if this is the reality in this country? And we live here. We know what is happening. I'm an American, and I have chosen to live in Iran, as a matter of fact, one, because of the safety, the security, which they're trying to destroy, trying to take away from us, and also because of the respect that actually people have for women. Yes, Iran has its problems like anywhere else, but it's far from, for example, my native country, the United States, where the systemic problems take place, especially when we're talking about police violence. So the hypocrisy is shown more and more every day, and I'm hoping that our young people, well, some of our young people, because I think the majority of them really understand what this is about. This has been about this from the beginning, the destruction of the Islamic Republic, the destruction of the lifestyles that we have. Yes, we have economic economic pressure because of the sanctions, but in general, we have a very calm life in Iran. Security has been everything, and that's what they're trying to destroy right now.
Sure, yeah. Sure, that's a great point that you make. Perhaps it's a point that is forgotten by some of the people and rioters that are out there on the streets that Marwa Osman. But the mere fact that you have, and this is something that's known, but it should be, I think, advertised more, is that whatever gripes or problems the initial stage of the protesters had and were bringing out to the streets, do you agree that that was stolen when there was the acts of violence, when there were ambulances that were being torched or perhaps stores that were being lit on fire, and these burning of posters, etc., and things of that nature that obviously were all about violence, that was the beginning of the end for the people who had some problems, wanted to be heard, but it was overtaken by them?
Definitely. Again, this is by the playbook. You can see it in Beirut. It happened in Beirut in October 2019, when people were really mad at the government who stole from the actual public and went down to the streets. And it took like 6 or 7 days for the people to realize that what was going on was not what the public wanted, which made the streets empty again. And only the only available parties were those who were breaking down Beirut. And this is exactly what happened in different provinces in Iran, where you had people who had some demands. They wanted their voice to be heard at the first couple of days, and then vandalism, rioters, killing of police officers who did not even have weapons on them. They didn't even have guns on them, in comparison to more than 1,200 American civilians killed in 2022 by police officers before even being arrested. That's not even including protests or marches, just civilians going on with their daily lives, trying to be citizens, killed on the spot by the police. The exact opposite happened in Iran, where police officers trying to regain control of the situation, trying to bring back safety to the Iranian public, were killed. Their throats were cut. They were killed in the most brutal ways.
Indeed.
Despite the fact that they were trying to protect their country. And this was done by insurgents who were trained, who were funded, who were given guidelines as to what to do, what to attack, what to target, who to target, and how to create organized chaos in the streets of Iran. But what the world doesn't realize that this is not, we're not talking about another of their authoritarian friends in the kingdom regimes where oppression is really used against the public. This is a nation that has law, that has parliament, that has institutions that works for the public, by the public, which
thanks for that.
Will not be...
Sorry to jump in. I got to give Marzia 40 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Iran's patience is up to a point, and it's going to run thin.
Yes.
How can it counter non-military method what's the onslaught through the media and through online posts against what it obviously perceives as its enemy?
Right. I mean, it's very difficult, indeed. Iran has been patient, and the people have been very patient, especially when seeing these security officials and so many regular people just being killed and tortured, not in a way that any one regular person would do some things. I think that as the people become more and more aware, and we in the media have to become more aggressive, showing the reality of what is happening on the streets, the pluses and the minuses, and also showing the reality of these Western-funded media that want to bring down the Islamic revolution.
Thank you for that, Marzia Hashemi. It's all the time we have, host of Hidden Files, and Marwa Osman, thank you, host of MidiStream. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. Thanks for tuning in. From Mika Vitale and the team, it's goodbye until next time.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
from our imams, the ninth imam is the first, whose imamat began at a very young age, about 8 or 9.
As-salamu alayka ya Abu Jafar, Muhammad ibn Ali al-Barakat.
Peace be upon you, O Abu Jafar, Muhammad, the son of Ali, the righteous, the pious.
This is Dialogue, a program on the famous conversations of Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I'm your host Mahdi, and we're talking about the dialogues of Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam. Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam was the ninth divinely appointed imam from among the household of the Messenger of Allah. And His Eminence Imam al-Jawad was also the direct descendant of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings upon him. We find that Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam economized when it came to spending upon himself. He lived a rather ascetic, simple lifestyle. But His Eminence Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam spent a great abundant amount of wealth on the poor and the needy people amongst the Muslims. And it is precisely because of this unequaled and unparalleled generosity that Imam al-Jawad has been called and titled Al-Jawad, the Generous. This surname was the most particular and famous surname of Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam, to the extent that he was well known and famous for it amongst the people.
Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam stated, "Patience in the face of misfortune is itself a misfortune for the one who gloats over your bad luck."
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's an honor and a blessing to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. So, dear friends, we are talking about the wonderful dialogues of the ninth divinely appointed Imam, Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam. We find in the beautiful conversations and the beautiful dialogues of this divinely appointed Imam from the household of the Messenger of Allah that he spoke about the 12th divinely appointed Imam, the awaited Savior, the Mahdi, who is to come at the end of time. Now, it's very interesting, but we find that there is a certain conversation with Abdul Azim al-Hassani, peace and blessings upon him, who happens to be another very important individual in the history of the Shias. He is from the descendants of Imam Hassan al-Mujtaba alayhi salam. And so they have this conversation amongst one another, Abdul Azim al-Hassani and Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam. In this conversation, Abdul Azim al-Hassani asks questions regarding the Mahdi. And we find that the divinely appointed Imam, Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam, he says that the companions of Imam al-Mahdi